Jerry Bader Show, a couple of quick points before I move along. A listener says the Deep Purple Smoke on the Water story the Boston tour guide told was complete fiction. It was about something that happened at a concert. I can accept that. Just passing along what the tour guide said. Tour guide in San Francisco told us Jimi Hendrix recorded CDs. So you can't take as gospel what a tour guide says. I was just throwing it out there. Item two, the story back about the Middleton Cross Plains school district teacher. Two inputs from listeners. One, why don't the districts ban that site? You know, block those sites. It's a really good point. Why don't they? Two, a liberal relative says you're showing your obvious lack of knowledge about the grievance procedure and binding arbitration. No, I know the other teachers couldn't stop this process. I do understand that. What I'm saying is, why don't they complain about it? Why don't they say this isn't what this is meant for? Listener had it right? Okay. Unless I'm thinking of something else, but I thought it was that song. I could have the wrong song. It's entirely possible. But the listener has that story right. Anyway. I understand the process. I'm not saying teachers could stop it. I'm saying they could bitch about it. And what I want to know is, are teachers in that district happy or unhappy that this guy got his job back? Jason, you think, what percent do you think are happy? What do you think percent of teachers feel, well, yes, we need to protect each other this way? I bet you it's a high number. I don't know what it is. I'll bet you it's a really high number. All, you think 40%? I think it's over 50. I do. All the unions have done is protect bad teachers. That's why I don't understand good teachers supporting the teachers union. I never understood that. All right. I'm not going to say because I think it would give it away to some degree. Maybe it wouldn't, but I'm not going to say anyway. My wife attended something Saturday, this presentation. That's all I'm going to say. And the person presenting made a really interesting observation. I want to do this quickly because I've got a few things to get to, and I want to see if anyone can get this. Nobody in the group did. She was talking about how there was a time when Sunday afternoons were for visiting family. Growing up, we visited my grandparents. Jason, you too. I think anyone at or approaching 40 would remember that. Very few people do that these days. That tradition is gone. Of visiting grandma, grandpa, whatever, for the most part, that tradition you still do. You are a rare bird. Most people in this group admitted very few people do that anymore. I mean, I go see my mom on Sundays. But the traditional, you know, you bundle up the family and you take them to grandma and grandpa's. Very few people do that. Why do you think it went away? She gave what she thought was the number one answer. I don't know that I agree, and I never would have thought of her answer. I want to do this very quickly. In fact, Jason, you can just put them up hot. You don't need to screen them. 30, 40, and then much longer than that, years ago, it was very common for people on Sunday afternoons to go visit family. It is far less common. The woman that was giving this presentation that my wife saw had a reason why. I don't know if I agree with what she thinks is her number one reason, but I want to see if anyone will guess it because nobody in this group did. Hi, you're on the air. What do you think it is?
NFL football.
That is not her answer. Thanks a lot for the call. That's not her answer. That was my immediate answer. My wife said that was the answer that everybody said. 406-1360, 888-455-1360. It's not football. I find that really hard to believe. She thinks there's another reason, and her, I will say this, her reason slightly predates the popularity of NFL football on TV. Why don't people visit family on Sunday afternoons anymore? Hi, what do you think it is?
I think it's because businesses started being open on Sundays and more of the family had to actually work.
That is it. That is the answer. That's it. Thanks a lot for the call. That's the answer that she gave, that stores started opening on Sunday. And then people had to work. And it just became another day where people were working. That guy's good because nobody else got it in the group that my wife was with. I guessed. And I never would have gotten it. Here's the argument. That trend started, NFL football didn't become the monster Sunday event it is today until the late 60s, early 70s. Stores started opening on Sunday a little before then, but it was predominantly in the morning. Then they were open all day. I remember when the grocery store in my little hometown started opening for a little while on Sunday morning. That was a big, big deal. Why did they do it? Because in that instance, you're missing all that church traffic. That the Catholic Church, and there's a Lutheran church right next door, and neither of them are very far from the store. You know, that it was 8 and 10:30 Mass, I believe. And I don't know what the Lutheran service is, but you're just missing a huge mass of people who would stop and grab some stuff at the store. And when they first started doing it, it was very, very busy. The other thing I thought, actually, was that people don't go to church as much as they used to. Church attendance in America is way down, and I think a lot of that happened after going to church. I'm not saying she's wrong. I just don't know. I never would have thought of that one. I just had television in general. And, I mean, another factor, I think, is family splitting up more than they did back then. Well, that's good to hear, Jason, that you do that. I think you are in a small minority. I could be wrong. But I think there was a time when everybody did it. And I just don't think that happens. I mean, my wife and I will go see my mom. It usually just schedules out that it's easier for me to just run up and see her. I don't do it every Sunday. I do it pretty much every other Sunday. And I think that's just the way it works out. All right, something happened over the weekend. There was a letter to the editor published in Saturday's Wall Street Journal. It is called Progressive Kristallnacht Coming. I wonder how many people know what the Kristallnacht is. This letter was written by a gazillionaire, a very rich man, Tom Perkins. You probably don't know who he is. He is founder of Kleiner Perkins Caulfield and Byers. He is a very wealthy man. He lives in San Francisco. Here's his argument. Regarding your editorial censors on campus, writing from the epicenter of progressive thought, San Francisco, I would call attention to the parallels of fascist Nazi Germany to its war on its 1%, its 1%, namely its Jews, to the progressive war on the American 1%, namely the rich. From the Occupy movement to the demonization of the rich embedded in virtually every word of our local newspaper, the San Francisco Chronicle, I perceive a rising tide of hatred of the successful 1%. There is outrage, public reaction to the Google buses carrying technology workers from the city to the peninsula high-tech companies which employ them. These buses have been vandalized. People think it's wrong that there are Google buses that come and get the employees, that they should have to take regular mass transit. We have outrage over the rising real estate prices which these techno geeks can pay. We have, for example, libelous and cruel attacks in the Chronicle on our number one celebrity, the author Danielle Steele, that's his ex-wife, alleging that she is a snob despite the millions she has spent in our city's homeless and mentally ill over the past decades. Now, this is where he created a lot of controversy. This is a very dangerous drift in our American thinking. Kristallnacht was unthinkable in 1930. Is its descendant, progressive radicalism, unthinkable now? He compares the way the Jews are treated to the way rich people are being treated in San Francisco. You can imagine how that's going to go over. So the next day, the Wall Street Journal had a story on this. a top Silicon Valley venture capital firm on Saturday disavowed the statements of one of its founders, comparing growing anger toward the rich in the United States to Nazi Germany singling out of the Jews in the 1930s. In a letter to the editor appeared in the opinion pages of Saturday's Wall Street Journal, Tom Perkins, venture funding pioneer, co-founder of Kleiner Perkins, Caulfield and Byers, wrote, and then they say what I just told you. After several hours of heated criticism on Twitter and coverage on several major websites, Kleiner Perkins tweeted Saturday afternoon, "Tom Perkins has not been involved in KPCB in years. We were shocked by his views expressed today in the Wall Street Journal and do not agree." Perkins was still listed as a partner emeritus on the firm's website as of Saturday. A Kleiner Perkins spokeswoman told the Journal in an email that the tweet is the company's formal statement on the matter. In his letter, Perkins also objected to libelous and cruel attacks, blah, blah, blah. Perkins' letter comes amid growing class tensions, including high-profile confrontations between affordable housing and other activists and the expanding workforce of tech companies whose affluence has helped drive up housing costs in the Bay Area. They talked about this when we were in San Francisco last year. Tech workers and the corporate shuttle buses that transport them from San Francisco south to large companies such as Google have been the object of numerous protests as the buses have become a symbol of gentrification to many. Last week, many protesters reportedly lined up outside a Google executive's Berkeley home before confronting shuttle buses. Prior incidents included a window of one of the buses being broken in Oakland and other confrontations in San Francisco. Perkins mentioned the shuttle protests in the letter. San Francisco has responded to protesters' complaints about the shuttle buses with a plan to levy a small tax on their use of city bus stops. Protesters blasted the proposed tax as inconsequential in a public hearing this week in San Francisco, but the city moved forward with the pilot program. So Google can afford to shuttle their employees to and fro. So what? Now, would I compare treatment of the rich today in America to Jews in the Holocaust? Of course not. Of course not. Here's what he is saying, though. As the Jews were more and more targeted, nobody paid attention. I shouldn't say everybody. Many people in America love to hate rich people. The president of the United States and his political party is fueling this. You're going to hear a lot about income inequality tomorrow. You're going to hear that. You're going to hear how unfair it is. Liberals in America are stoking this hatred of the wealthy. I wouldn't compare it to the Holocaust, but it is vicious what's happening. Rich people are being vilified. Rich people are hated just for being rich, just for having the things that others don't have. It's not healthy, it's morally wrong, and it's counterproductive to the growth of America to hate people for being rich. It's class envy. It is the worst. It's envy is just the worst thing on which to drive politics, and that's what the left is doing right now. You don't live in San Francisco. I can imagine how bad it is. You don't live in some of the liberal epicenters of America. During Act 10, and you can ask anybody who was in Madison at the time. During Act 10, you weren't safe if you wore a suit, coat, and tie. It was assumed you were an evil Republican. That is true. You can ask just about anybody who was accosted. It was just assumed. Again, is that the same as Jews dying in gas chambers? No, of course not. But is it dangerous? Yes. Is it unhealthy? Yes. Should it stop? Yes. All right, in 3 minutes, something I warned you that was much bigger than you thought it was, and I've spent a lot of time on it, but I want to talk about it a little bit again in 3 minutes. It's 10:49.
Follow Jerry on Twitter. Go to jerrybatershow.com.